Episode 145.
So after we heard the manufacturers all get up and speak, and then some of the aftermarket people got up, and I held up my cell phone and I said, everyone has a smartphone. Who owns the pictures in your phone? Does Apple own the pictures in your phone, or do you own the pictures in your phone? Who owns the text messages? You know, who owns the music? I think that Apple owns the hardware of the phone, but they don't own the contents of it. And that's how I feel about automobiles. When you're driving down the road, anything that's streaming from your car should be your under your control.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and thank you for listening to Remarkable Results Radio. And welcome to episode 145 with Dennis Montalbano from German Auto Repair in Fresno, California. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on site, and on demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. With all this great audio perfectly archived on the internet, we always welcome more listeners. Can you do me a favor? Pay this episode forward. Send an email to a friend or peer with a link to this episode and ask them to listen. I hope, like you, they come to appreciate the wisdom that flows from each interview. The podcast has grown through word of mouth, and thank you for your help in spreading the podcast wisdom. Now get ready to hear from Dennis Montalbano. We met in person at NACE Cars 2016 in Anaheim, California. I happened to walk up to a table where two current guests and two upcoming guests were talking. What a find for me to meet former and current guests just sharing their notes. And Dennis was among them. The interview brings out the professional thinker side of Dennis, but I'll tell you, he's one funny guy, and I also enjoyed his company while in California. He even invited me to an ASCCA get-together with a few cocktails just before I left to the airport. I met his team from ASCCA and many members, and it was a great time. Thank you, Dennis. Dennis has been around the horn for 49 years, and his influence goes beyond being a shop owner and into association, industry, and government involvement. Now, regarding this episode, you're going to walk away with these findings. Dennis never owned a toolbox. He sold Snap-on and was the youngest Snap-on dealer at age 22. And he fixed cars, but he never teched for a living. Dennis tells how to find the demographics of your customers without any sophisticated survey, so you can know where to put your advertising dollars. You may have heard this idea before. Dennis still owns his first car he ever bought, a classic Corvette. Hear the story. He also shares advice on referrals and training for service writers. And as mentioned, Dennis is the president of ASCCA in California and a California-certified arbitrator for Lemon Law cases. He's testified to the California legislature on who owns data for your car. He's got a great analogy to tell you. And he tells the story on who created the standardized data plug that resides on all cars today. Now, here we go. Enjoy my interview with Dennis Montalbano. A warm welcome to Dennis Montalbano from German Auto Repair in Fresno, California. Hey, Dennis, are you ready to share your remarkable results?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning to you. So what gets you out of bed in the morning, man?
Well, you know, I have a passion, and my passion is this industry. I don't know how people could just get up and go to work every day and come home every day and not have a passion for what they do.
Yeah. I hear you, man. I hear you. What makes you tick? What makes Dennis Montalbano tick?
I guess what makes me tick is I have the ability to help a lot of people, and I have the ability to communicate. My ability to communicate ideas makes me a good motivator. And by motivating people, you can get them to do what you want, what they want. And it's like everybody pulling the rope rather than trying to push it.
So part of that drive, Dennis, must be that you're the president of ASCCA out in California, and you get a chance to get out and talk to people, right?
I do. I was president in 2011 and then president this year. In 2011, I put about 1,000 miles a month on my car. And one day I was in Redding, and it's the very top northern part of it, of California. And then a couple days later, I was in San Diego, which you can't get much further south. And over the weekend, I had to go to some training in Dallas. So, yeah, I do get along.
Wow. And so you enjoy getting up at these chapter meetings and just sharing your passion of the industry to your members.
Yeah, I want to get people involved. This industry needs involvement. And a lot of people don't really understand the threats to the industry. They don't understand the complications that are coming down. As the cars become more and more complicated, so does the laws and so does the governing of the industry.
So you've been at this quite a while. How long?
At 19 years old, when I was going to college, I managed the largest Gulf station, gas station, on the West Coast. The average gas station back then was pumping about 30,000 gallons a month. We were doing 165,000 gallons a month, and that was during the energy crisis that we all remember. And so I decided that I was giving a check to the owner every month, and I decided that I should give the check to myself. And so I became a Snap-on tool dealer. I was their youngest dealer at 22, and 8 years later, I became their youngest district field manager at 30.
So wait a minute. I'm actually trying to figure this out. You were never a tech.
I have been working on cars since I was 10 years old. I took care of all the family cars, tune-ups, oil changes, but I never actually made a living out of repairing cars. And I sold a lot of tools and managed a lot of people that sold a lot of tools and managed a lot of people that repaired a lot of cars, but I never had a toolbox on the line.
So you went into business almost with an entrepreneurial business drive instead of saying, I'm a tech and I want to own a shop.
Yeah, incorrect. What happened was when I turned 22 years old, I got married. I bought my first home and I went into Snap-on. I went into my own business and in 6 months. And how I had the fortitude to do that, I still look back and say, wow. But it's worked out very well for me.
All right. For all these years, what does being successful mean to you?
Well, you have to have your health. You have to have your family. The financial security is also important. Nobody likes to work for free. If you work for free, you don't value yourself very much. So I think I'm valuable, so I should make a valuable salary. I have two grown children who are very successful, and I'm happy with that.
I guess that's almost all that matters, huh?
It really does, because if you're wealthy and you're Steve Jobs dying, and it doesn't matter, you know, when you leave your keys behind, so everything you bought in your life doesn't matter anymore if you don't have your health.
So how could we emulate you? Any good habits you'd like to share?
Well, let's see. I actually have a car. I bought a Corvette when I was 19 years old, and I still have it.
Uh-huh.
And that was 1971, so you guys can do the math and figure out how old I am. I still have the car. Everybody's amazed that I still have a car that I had from the early 70s.
And,
and I take it to shows, and I've totally restored it a couple of times. And so that's kind of my passion, my hobby. I do water painting. I do stained glass. I do all kinds of creative things too. I'm not just a all business guy.
So that's your escape. I mean, that's what you do to go out and recharge yourself.
Right. Yeah. And I enjoy driving. So when I go to a chapter and I drive for 2 or 3 hours to get to the, I drove last week 6 hours to get to a meeting, and it's kind of it centers me. It keeps me focused.
Will you ever take the 71 Corvette with you?
The 56 Corvette?
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, the 56
yeah.
Corvette.
I bought it in 1971.
All right, okay.
Yeah, it's a 1956
you
Corvette.
May not take that out on a long trip.
If I do, it would go on a trailer because I like air conditioning and power steering, cruise control, and all those creature comforts.
You know? I get that. So tell me about the training culture inside of German Auto Repair.
Well, we're at a Bosch-authorized service center since the inception of the Bosch program back in the in the early 80s, I have four techs that have all been through the Bosch schools. There's two of us that were in the first 50 Bosch certified level 5 technicians in the country.
Great.
And so it's been a good symbiotic relationship with Bosch. They're a very, very, very helpful company if you work on European vehicles like we do. We only specialize in German cars, and we do have a couple of stepchildren. We do some Ferraris and some Volvos, but mostly just German cars.
So if I owned a Mercedes and I owned a Malibu, would you take my Malibu?
Well, we do work on some American cars. We also do the drunk driver interlock program, where we put the breathalyzers in the cars. And of course, those cars come in here. They're all different makes and models. So we do work on some other kinds of cars too. I do have a few customers that I work on the whole family's cars, and then they do have a Chevy Malibu or a Suburban.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Anthony, when you're in a shop, are you talking tech as well as product?
Whenever I do a physical training, there is product incorporated part of the whole training overall, but it's to maximize the time, whether it's diagnostics, whether it's inspection, whether it's installation. So that way they understand that, hey, by skipping that extra 20 seconds by putting on this set of brake pads and not replacing the hardware, hey, this might be the reason why that I'm getting comebacks. And usually, being a ex-shop owner, I understand that the first time you get paid, the second time's free.
And so are the techs really starving for this information?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of times you have, we live in an industry where I like to say they cut the roast in half and they don't understand why, but they do it just because they've always been doing it type of an industry. So, you know, to break it through that, they've been doing something for 30 years and they see as they haven't been doing anything wrong, but it starts to open up their eyes to, hey, you know what? It wasn't necessarily wrong, but there is a better way.
So you're really talking to me about an aha moment.
Exactly.
And tell me, when you see that happening more and more from technicians that you're out with, how does it make you feel?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you really feel like you're giving back to the community overall. But ultimately, the way I tell them, you know, I look at every single vehicle that I worked on prior to, or I had my customer, just like I'd put my family in that vehicle. I look at it as I'm keeping everybody else that much safer because the job's getting done correctly.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Do you pay for training for your techs, Dennis?
I do. If they go to class at night, I give them comp time during the day. So if they're going to go to a class, they can get off at noon and go to the class at 6. And or just take if they take a couple of days and go somewhere for training, they get paid their regular salary.
Service advisor training, is that a requirement every couple of years for your people?
As a sales trainer for Snap-on Tools, I learned what makes people say yes, and I make it very clear to him that he needs to listen and he needs to make sure that it's not a confrontational transaction. One of the things that I've trained him to do if someone is upset, the first thing to do is to walk around the counter and stand next to the person, because that counter becomes a barrier between you and it's us versus you. And so when we walk around the counter, we say, you know, we're on your side. We really want to know what we could do to help you and make this thing go away. And how do we solve the problem? And it's something that I've learned over the years, that if you just listen to what people, don't interrupt them, don't deny fault, just listen. And so my service advisor that I have right now, I've had many over the years. I've been here 27 years. The shop is actually 49 years old. And so I'm very big on how people are treated here, and so I'm very visible in the business, and then I'm invisible in the business. It just depends on what needs to be done.
Smart, very smart. Give me your best customer service story that you would tell over and over again in front of meetings.
That's a good question. I hadn't really thought of it. We have so many third generation customers here now. When you're almost 50 years old in Fresno, Fresno has grown to be the fifth largest city in California. So we saw Fresno when it was a little farm town, and now it's become a pretty big metropolis. And so we're seeing grandchildren and great-grandchildren of our original customers coming in here. And I remember one time we hadn't seen a lady for, probably 5, 8 years, maybe even 10. And she walked through the door, and I welcomed her by her name, and she looked at me and she said, "Oh my God, Dennis, you remember me?" And I said, "Yeah, how's your daughter, Michelle?" And she said, "Michelle is given me 2 grandchildren. She's married." And I said, "Wow, I remember when she got her first car." So that's the kind of relationship that I don't think the dealers enjoy that kind of relationship, or the chains. I think that's what makes the independent shops so valuable to people.
You know, let's talk about that in a few minutes. I know you're passionate about that. Where are you spending your advertising money, your marketing dollars?
Okay, well, we tried print. We got very little results from print. I'm not a coupon clipper kind of business. Mm-hmm. We work on high-end cars.
Yep.
And our number one source of people, of new customers that come in the door are is referrals. And I tell people that, if you move to a new town and you don't know anybody, you need to find a doctor, you need to find a hairstylist, and you need to find a mechanic or an auto repair shop. And so one of the things that I always say is, people who cut your hair, a woman finds somebody that she likes the hairstyle, and she'll say, "Who does your hair?" She's new to town. She wants a referral. And that's how I think the automotive industry celebrates its uniqueness. So what I do is I decided one time that I was going to find out where my customers were coming from. So anytime a customer walks through the door, they fill out a piece of paper, and it's their name and address, email. And so all those things that we need from them, and then I put on the bottom of it, how did you hear about German auto repair? And then they'll put, I have options, newspaper, television, radio. And the if they put newspaper down, I know they don't know how they got there, but because I don't advertise on newspaper. But
right.
So as my customers came through the door, I decided I was going to find out not only what radio station they were listening to when they drove in, but what their presets were. So I created a little spreadsheet, and I figured out where they were coming from. So if you have 10 cars that come in and 9 of them are on one radio station, you pretty much found your demographics. You found your peeps. And so you go to that radio station. Of course, you don't tell them that this is where all your customers are coming from. You just say, "I'd like to have some information." And then, so what we've done over the years is we've advertised where we want to bring the people from. So, if we did stereos and alarms, we might want to advertise at the 18 to 25-year-old people, and we'd want to go to that radio station. But if we want, say, 35 to 54 people that are of affluence and driving nicer cars, we would go to a radio station that they're going to listen to, maybe the talk radio or news. So that's how we market.
Great, great tip. Thank you so much. Check out the presets. Love it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about something you said a little while back. You mentioned the word we're independents. You mentioned we need to get involved. You mentioned about industry threats. I know you may be passionate a little bit about telematics and, who owns the data. You talked about complications of our industry, and you talked about laws. Isn't California one of those? Don't they come up with a law just for the sake of coming up with a law?
Yeah, you would think that the legislators must get brownie points for thinking how many things that they could come up with. I can remember one of the most frivolous laws that was coming down the pipe was a law in California that you had to have so many nurses for so many patients. And the nurses union was working that so that they could make sure that Well, it created a nursing shortage because now to comply with the law, they had to hire nurses, and the nurses were shortage. Shortage in nursing. So, not too long after that, some very creative legislator created a law that said that you have to have so many janitors per so many patients, and they tried to get that law through. And of course, it kind of got laughed off the floor. But you know, it never ceases to amaze me the creativity of some of these idiots that are trying to write laws that micromanage people's lives. We have one right now that's telling people that they can't change their oil any less than the manufacturer's recommendations. And the problem with that is that
any less than.
Yeah, so they're trying. They actually published a piece here called the 3,000-mile oil change myth, and they're saying that we're wasting our environment. That no car needs an oil change at 3,000 miles, and so they're going after some of the oil change industry to change the way they do business. You can't change oil every 3,000 miles, like Arnold Palmer tells you to do with Pennzoil. The law is progressing through the process right now, and I've met with the author of the bill, Senator Ben Allen, and I've met with him several times, and we've been able to get the law modified. But yeah, you're right. California does seem to be the creativity center of the world when it comes to laws. Unfortunately, the other states that don't want to do all the heavy lifting, they just basically adopt whatever California adopts. So there are so many. What happens in California? That pretty much happens the rest of the country eventually.
Yeah, I'm from New York, and our government people love to monitor what's going on there and say, well, if it's good for the first biggest state, maybe the second biggest state should be doing something about it. Or I don't know if New York's now the third biggest state. I'm not quite sure. But yeah, we seem to be adopting an awful lot of the things that go on in California. So do me a favor when it comes to automotive repair, continue your fight. And I think it's never been more prevalent to belong to an association and to realize that part of your dues goes to keep a handle on all this crazy legislation. So let's talk about what you do for ASCCA. And you told me you visited chapters, but when you're out there visiting chapters and you meet all these great independents, what's the message that you give?
Well, I tell them that while they were working, while they were doing a brake job or they were charging the air conditioning on a car, we were in Sacramento, got their back. We got their back because what's happening, they don't even know what they don't even know. And half these shop owners go to work every day and their goal is to fix the cars and get them out of there and keep the customers happy.
Yeah.
But they don't realize that the industry itself, there's more to fix this industry than just fixing cars. This industry is very, very regulated. When I hear a business say that they're going green, the automotive repair industry has been green longer than any other business, if you think about it. We've been recycling everything. Every fluid that comes out of a car is being scrutinized. And so we've been green longer than green's been green, I think. And so, but some of the things when I visit the chapters and I tell them about these new laws that are coming down, we can actually mobilize these people and we can get them to write letters and send faxes and call their legislatures. And we can actually get them to, we do well with grassroots.
You told me a great story in our pre-call. And you said that in California, the dealers have about 12% of the share. And then the big box chains, that may include the Walmarts of this world, have about 8%. And then you said that the independents have 80. And wouldn't it be great if those 80% of the independents that own that were really more united and together and had a stronger front and got along and did all the right things for each other? And you were so passionate about that.
We have so much power than we just, you know, like I told you, I feel like we've got 500 horses under the hood and we've got a 3-inch tire in the back of the car and we're in sand. We don't seem to be able to harness the power that we have. You know, we are what keeps this state moving. If you think about how many people have to get to work every day, how many ambulances have to run, how many police cars, how many fire trucks, you think about the PG&E trucks of our utilities, and you think about all of these vehicles that are running up and down the highways in California every single day doing their jobs. There's one person in common to everything that's rolling down the street, and it's the repair industry, whether it be the dealer, the Walmarts, or the independents. But, you know, we're like the unsung heroes of keeping this economy moving. So like I said before, is if the big box chains couldn't get together one day and they all decided to go on strike and they decided they weren't going to be able to do any repairs on any cars for whatever reason, 8% of the business could be absorbed by the dealers and the independents easily. 8% increase in business isn't anything. And likewise, if the auto dealers did the same thing and they stopped working on cars, the rest of the industry could pick up 12%. But if we stopped, the independent garage owners, if we could just miraculously decide that we were going to all unite and not work for 1 week, the state of California would come to a screeching halt, pardon the pun. Because really, if you think, where would the tow trucks tow the cars? Where would the customers get their cars fixed so they could get to work in the morning? There'd be so much screaming at the government. You've got to help these people. What's going on? Why? You have to write laws that say they can't go on strike. But we've got about 36,000 auto repair dealers registered with the Bureau of Automotive Repair in California. That's including dealers and box stores and stuff. And our association it doesn't even have 10%. And that's just an amazing feat that this small amount of people in the Automotive Service Councils of California are fighting for 40,000 businesses. And we're keeping the wolves out of the door, and the laws. We had a law that got passed in California in January about tow trucks. Tow trucks now, when they come in, they have to fill out a form. The tow truck driver has to give all this information about the tow: his driver's license number, his name, his tow company, his address, the customer's name, the VIN number. And of course, nobody knew about this law. It got passed in the middle of the night, basically, and so January 1st, the law went into effect. And so as I was going around talking to all the different chapters, I'm saying, okay, you guys are aware of the new tow bill. It's a $10,000 fine if you're not keeping a log of the tows that come into your shop. And they all looked at me like deer in the headlights. What are you talking about? That's the kind of stuff that happens without people knowing it's happening.
Dennis, do you think there's value in that law? Who benefits from it?
You know, we didn't think it had any legs. And how it got through, I'm still absolutely amazed. But there was a thing, there's a problem with tow truck drivers steering cars to shops. And so in other words, if you picked up a car off the freeway and you took it to a shop, and that shop would pay the tow truck driver 50 or 100 bucks to bring him the car. And not always I don't have to pay tow truck drivers to bring cars to me. My customers bring them to me. But there are some people in this industry that aren't ethical. And so the law was designed to keep track of who got toes and where they went, and to make sure that steering process didn't happen. I don't really see it making a big difference in this market here, but maybe in LA or the bigger metropolis areas where it's a big problem.
So not that you're not busy enough, what else do you do for the industry?
Well, I'm a California certified arbitrator for the Lemon Law cases, and I've been doing that for about 17 years. Listen to a lot of disputes between people that buy cars and people that sell cars, and I do that. I'm also on the executive board of directors for the Fresno Regional Work Investment Board, and that's a program. I'm the chair for the Youth Council. We put kids that are at risk, and we try and get them job ready. We work with incarcerated youth. We work with some kids that have never held a job, and we are teaching them how to dress and removing some tats and some piercings from them so they can get jobs. And so, yeah, I do a lot of other things too.
And you want to slow down one of these days soon?
Well, yeah. You know, I have an old saying that you can't idle uphill for very long. So I don't feel that I'm overworked. I don't feel I'm overstressed, but I will be slowing down the next couple of years. I'm going to go to my next career.
Okay. So without me being too personal here, you have a succession plan that you're looking at?
I do. I have a succession plan in place. I was thinking about maybe operating some podcasts for the auto industry, but I guess somebody else has already done that. So,
you want to be my guest host? Let's do this. Come on. Yeah. Are you kidding me? East Coast, West Coast. I can just see it now. It would be great.
There we go. Yeah.
I know it. Well, good for you. I'm glad. You know, and I think you're right. It's just between me and you. I think we're similar in age. Think about, as you said, what's your next career going to be? And to me, that's exciting because that's exactly what's going on with me. Hey, what's on your bucket list? What's a place you'd like to visit you've not been to?
Italy. I would like to go, and I have some relatives that I actually know there. My family's only been here. My dad and mom were first generation here, so we still have family that knows who we are and we know who they are, and I'd like to go there before they pass, and that's on my bucket list. I had Hawaii on my bucket list. I did that last year. I had Alaska on my bucket list. I did that the year before. I've been to New York quite a few times because I have a son that lives there, and traveled the United States. One of the other things I'd like to do is get in a motorhome and just go for a drive.
Just go. All right. Yeah. Have you seen Niagara Falls yet?
I have not.
All right. Because you know that's only a few miles from where I am.
Okay.
Got to stop by. We'll make a steak on the grill. If you had unlimited time and money, all kinds, you would know what to do with it all. What would you be doing?
Probably not much different than what I'm doing right now. I might have to add on to my 5-car garage and put a few more cars in there. But, you know, how many cars are too many cars? I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet.
Hey, do you own your dream car?
You know, I did. I set a goal when I was 30 that by the time I was 40, I would buy a Ferrari. And, you know, I at 30 years old, you're invincible. You're immortal. Everything's working. And so I figured by 40, my life would be over anyway, so I might as well set this goal of owning a Ferrari when I was 40. So the day I turned 40, I drove up to the Bay Area and bought a Ferrari, and I drove the car for 22 years, and I sold it last year. My fill of my Ferrari was fulfilled. And so, yeah, dream car. I mean, the Corvette is, my 56 Corvette is like family. I'm the second owner on the car, and I've owned it for 45 years.
Right.
So, you know, I know my kids are going to always have that car because it's dad's car, and I have a 57 Chevy two-door hardtop that I've had since high school. And so that car's sitting in the garage too. My youngest son likes to drive that to car shows and stuff. So
it's familia. It's just part of the family.
Yeah.
Hey, I learned a lot. Thanks for your passion for the industry and all that you're doing out in California to represent the, you know, the entire repair side of the industry. And I look forward to actually seeing you and meeting you in person within a week, I think, of this broadcast, which is great because I'm going out for the NACE Cars event.
Okay.
So I want to thank you, Dennis Montalbano from German Auto Repair in Fresno, California, for being with us and sharing. Would you come back someday and talk legislation?
Sure.
Give me 2 minutes on data, telematics, connected car. I mean, because I guarantee you, you're fighting or discussing or helping move legislation through in California on that now.
I testified in March at the California Senate hearing, transportation hearing, about who owns the data. And so after we heard the manufacturers all get up and speak, and then some of the aftermarket people got up, and I held up my cell phone and I said, everyone has a smartphone. Who owns the pictures in your phone? Does Apple own the pictures in your phone, or do you own the pictures in your phone? Who owns the text messages? You know, who owns the music? I think that Apple owns the hardware of the phone, but they don't own the contents of it. And that's how I feel about automobiles. When you're driving down the road, anything that's streaming from your car should be under your control. And the manufacturers sat up there and told everybody that they would never sell any information to a third party. And then in Monterey at the ETI conference, John Ellis said that they value each car at about $60,000 worth of data. So they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. But I got a rental car. I rented a car here just recently, And when I got in, it asked if I wanted to sync my phone to the radio, and I said no. But then I looked through the radio, through the screen, and the person that had rented the car before me, all his phone number and contacts were in the radio. So how private is the data that's being transported to the car? And if you've got Bluetooth in your car, the Big Brother's got all your contents, your phone. They can see your pictures. They already know how many people are in the car. They already know how fast you're going. They know where you're going. They know so much about you. And, you know, we quickly agree when we see the screen for GPS. We just push agree. When we get a new app, we push agree. And a lot of times we don't really understand what we're agreeing to. But it won't be long before the back side windows on your sedan will have a map and a picture of the McDonald's that's coming up on the next exit. Would you like to order your lunch? And you touch screen your window, and your lunch will be ready for you when you pull off the freeway. We're not that far away from that. And so we're going to be bombarded with telematics. It's something that we're really, really going to have to address. And I don't want the car to tell the customer where to take their car for repair unless I have the option to let my customer make that same appointment with me. So I think that the owner of the car should really be the final say-so on where that information goes.
Well, well said. Thank you for your wisdom. Well, boy, I really enjoyed this. I learned a lot. Thanks so much. Dennis, can you give us some great words to live by?
Like my father used to say to me, when you're through changing, you're through.
Wow. How simple is that and how powerful. Hey, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome, Carm. Thank you.
Hey, aftermarketers, thank you so much for listening. Now, find additional show notes on Dennis Montalbano from German Auto Repair and a link to his company on Dennis's show notes page at this URL, remarkableresults.biz/E145. Yes, every guest interview has their own show notes page, and there's good stuff there. The website is also a place where you can watch the replays of every weekly Facebook Live broadcast. Only 10 minutes of your time for a quick review of the weekly episodes, questions of the week, and more. A fun live show to keep you engaged in our podcast society. Hey, don't forget, you're an important reason I bring you these interviews, so you can profit from the wisdom found in each episode. So help spread the word. Tell your friends about this great resource. And thanks. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.